Kane is in the building.
Hello and welcome back to another 3P podcast episode. This is our sixth episode of the seventh season. Once again, I am your host, Josh Fromowitz, and I am joined by my other co-hosts,
Steven Benazzo
and Alex Castle.
And TJ is running a bit late. He'll be on a little later. Boys, what a weekend we had. Football season is officially over, but we had the joy, the delight of watching an incredible football game as the final one, as the Kansas City Chiefs defeated the Philadelphia Eagles 38-35. Spoiler alert, I'm sorry if you guys didn't watch, but you probably wouldn't be listening to the show if you hadn't watched the Super Bowl. So with that being said, Stevie, what was your biggest takeaway from the Super Bowl, which really was a tale of two halves?
My biggest takeaway is Andy Reid is such a phenomenal coach, and Andy Reid is more or so less like the reason why the Chiefs like came, like, yes, obviously the players executed the plays, but I mean, what he just like him and Eric Bieniemy, what they came up with, because you got to give Eric Bieniemy credit too, because he was the one calling plays. But when they got in the red zone,
I think Andy Reid technically calls the plays.
So between the two of them, yeah, it's like a joint effort. But I mean, when they were in the red zone, and I mean, Philly's defense has been like unreal all year. And really, I would say the difference in the game too is the Chiefs' O-line for not allowing any sacks. I mean, that is impressive, and especially on Pat Mahomes, who, you know, is not the, I mean, for some reason he could evade. Because he's not like the fastest guy by any means.
Plus, he also has a high ankle sprain.
And that too. And the fact that the Eagles couldn't get one singular sack the whole entire game, while they had like, you know, they created records for the amount of sacks they had this year. You got to get chalk it up to them, because that's phenomenal. But yeah, really, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy for just the play designs in the red zone, to the, you know, to Tony, to Sky Moore. I mean, these guys, you know, like Tony, you know,
you,
I think,
watch what you say with Castle here.
No, like, I'm just saying, like, he only had like, I think, scored like two or three touchdowns this year. And he had none prior. He didn't score once with the Giants. And then Sky Moore, same thing, his first touchdown in his career. Now, granted, he's only a rookie, but came in the Super Bowl. So they got guys that don't normally score. Obviously, Kelsey got the scoring going, but they were getting guys that really, you know, that you wouldn't expect to score. And really, I thought just they executed so well. And yeah, I think the difference was, you know, Andy Reid just knows the game so well and is so clever. And like Jonathan Gannon, he just got hired as the Cardinals head coach. Very, very respectable guy. You know, probably one of the best defensive coordinators, you know, in the game right now. Especially this season, you could argue he was the best one. And I think the Eagles, you know, clearly they wanted to retain him, and you know, just, if he wanted a head coaching opportunity, so I don't blame him. But, you know, they were giving him fits, and he couldn't really match what Andy Reid was doing. He could adapt and, you know, kind of scheme to, you know, stop the Chiefs' offense. And especially when they were, you know, the Eagles were up 10 at halftime, and you know, you would think they're in a good position, and yet they sold out the Chiefs to come back.
So you talked on a lot of points there. But the big one that I want to talk about was, you mentioned getting guys like Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney to step up, getting a score. And if you were to ask, if we were to tell you before the game that the Chiefs would score 38 points and their big plays would come from Kadarius Toney with his touchdown, late game touchdown, followed by the biggest punt return, the longest punt return in the Super Bowl history, you'd get Sky Moore and then a rookie, Isaiah Pacheco, as their three scores. Obviously, Travis Kelce had the first touchdown of the game, but he was relatively quiet after then. That's impressive on Andy Reid's part. And Castle, I hate to do this to you, but Stevie got me thinking, given how successful Andy Reid has been and what he has accomplished with Pat Mahomes this early in his career, I hate to say it, but are we in the midst of a dynasty? Does this feel like a little Brady Belichick?
I think so. And I think one of the biggest factors when you talk about the dynasty and comparing is, when you had Brady and Belichick, Brady and Belichick, they always had a slew of talent when it comes to wide receivers. But Brady never really, maybe towards the end of his career with Gronk and Edelman, those were his concrete guys. But you look out throughout his career, he had Randy Moss, Wes Welker, the list goes on and on. And then when you look at the Chiefs and what they've experienced the past few seasons, not re-signing Tyreek Hill and taking that risk and giving Juju Smith-Schuster a one-year deal, trading for a guy like Toney, who was having all of these issues with the Giants, and then finding ways to utilize him, and getting other guys like Valdez-Scantling and Hardman involved. Absolutely. We're definitely in the midst of a dynasty with these two. And I don't think it matters who is running the offense. If you got, you know, for those of you who have been following the coaching carousel, Eric Bieniemy is likely to leave. He has been trying to leave for a couple seasons now. Seems like he's more vocal, or the press is more vocal with him interviewing with teams, so he's going to leave. So it doesn't matter who replaces him. I think Mahomes and Reed just get each other. I think they have fun together, and they trust each other. And when Pat Mahomes was coming out of Texas Tech, you know, the way that they described him was he was just a gunslinger. You know, he was more known, I think, for his talents with baseball. People weren't too sure what he was going to be like. And then when you pair him with a coach like Andy Reid, it transforms a player completely. So I think the Chiefs drafting him and pairing him with a coach like Reid is setting up a tremendous future for this organization. But this game specifically, I think, speaks so many volumes about the Chiefs' future, because when you look at this Eagles team this year, I personally felt it didn't matter what team came out of the AFC. I had the Eagles as the favorite, and the Chiefs were able to turn that around in the second half. So I think we're going to see a lot of big things in Kansas City. And out of anyone to give credit, you give credit to those two and management too. It's, you know, they're the ones that are making the big calls. So coming full circle to answer your question, Josh, yes, I think we are witnessing the next Brady Belichick duo in Kansas City.
And I'm going to flip the script a little for TJ. You joined at a perfect time for this question, because I know you're going to savor every moment of it. What does this mean for the Eagles now? Do you consider this a failure of a season? Because you got Jalen Hurts, who probably played his best game as a pro, had basically a perfect QBR. You could argue that the Eagles were robbed on the final play of the game when Bradbury held Juju. What does this mean if you're the Eagles?
I mean, I wouldn't see the season as a complete failure. I mean, yeah, you lost the Super Bowl, but They, correct me if I'm wrong, one loss in the regular season?
Actually, I think it was three in total.
Oh, three. One with Hurts and two without him, right? Yeah. I mean, it depends on how they look into the offseason and how free agency goes. If they lose some key pieces, then I'd say you might want to hit the panic button a little bit. But as of right now, if they keep their defense and offense at least 90% intact, minus their coordinators getting signed to other teams, I think personnel-wise, they'll be just fine. But I think it brings in the question just how good of a coach Nick Sirianni is. And going into this season, we'll see that. He lost his two coordinators. And I think the bigger question isn't really the offense and defense and personnel going into the season. I think it's more management and coaches, who they bring in to help Jalen Hurts continue his development into an elite quarterback that we saw this year. And if they can keep that defense intact with a new defensive coordinator, whoever it may be, and if they can keep up the success both sides of the ball, I don't see an issue with Philly. It just comes down to coaching and seeing who they bring in. I know Castle and I were talking about this before when we got the news that the band is back together in New York. And I don't know. I think ultimately it comes down to who they bring in as OC and DC. And I think Nick Sirianni might be seen crying more on TV this season than he was just in the Super Bowl. So
that's a great way to end that. That was perfect. You became an instant meme from that. Stevie, I want to talk to you now. I asked TJ a little bit, but he didn't get a chance to talk on it, but that's okay. That leaves for a possible Stevie rant now. That final play of the game, not quite the final play, but the biggest play of the game was the Juju Smith ball into the end zone where he was allegedly held by James Bradbury. Was it a hold? Should it have been called with that much implications in the game? Do you think it was the right call?
I think it was enough of a holding that they could call it. I think it could have gone either way.
Wasn't really a catchable ball.
But he still got held. You know? It's not like Bradbury tugged at his jersey for a second. I mean, he repositioned Juju by having his arms and stuff on his hips, and then kind of held them a little bit too. And even Bradbury admitted it. If Bradbury's admitting it, how do you kind of deny that when players usually they complain about every single call that goes against them or that they get penalized for or flagged for? So the fact that, and especially in a game like this, in a situation it's not like the Eagles were getting blown out or they were blowing out the Chiefs. I mean, that, you know, had huge implications on the game. So the fact that he still admitted it was a hold, you know, he was hoping that the refs wouldn't call it, but they did.
I think the biggest thing, I'm not saying I agree or disagree with the call, but I think the big thing was that the refs didn't have any consistency during the game, which is what you want every game, but more specifically in the Super Bowl, the biggest game of the year. And the fact that for three and a half quarters, that call wasn't being made. That call wasn't being made the entire game. And then the last play, essentially, the biggest play of the game, it was called, which, yes, it could have been a penalty and it could not have, but if they're not calling that all game, why call it then?
I think it's just because the script called for that play in the fourth quarter. They had to stick to the script for the big game.
They had to get Mahomes his other ring. But no, I like I said, it, certain calls like throughout the year, you know, like, listen, I think the refs, this was probably one of the worst seasons of officiating I've ever seen. It really was awful this year and inconsistent. And then this game, you know, there weren't too many calls. You know, but they called the one on the Chiefs where the guy on like the fourth and one, the Chiefs D lineman that was like, forgot if it was encroachment or offsides or whatever. Like he pretty much lined, you know, like he was over and they called that. So like, you know, they were calling kind of certain ones and not calling the other ones. And, like I said, I think it was everyone's, I think everyone's a little overreacting to it. You know, yes, it did. It kind of sucked that, you know, but like all the Eagles players were saying, it's not like that one play lost them the game. I mean, they were up 10 at one point, you know, they just allowed the Chiefs to come back. And, you know, like one penalty shouldn't cost you. If a penalty loses you the game, that's just like, I don't think they'll ever really, you know, that, then that's just bad. But the Eagles players, and I'll give credit to the Eagles players that they weren't like salty about it. They didn't complain about it. They, you know, they were saying that's what the refs called. And, you know, pretty much like that one play didn't lose us, like other plays, you know, lost us the game. And, you know, so, like I said, they were up 10. So if they were still up 10, that penalty would not matter. But by then they allowed the Chiefs to come back, which then is why the penalty kind of mattered, because it, you know, pretty much sealed the game for the Chiefs. But like I said, I don't think, I think everyone's overreacting that, you know, the refs ruined the game. It was such a great game. And, you know, it was kind of unfortunate that it happened there. But, I mean, either way, that game was going to end no matter what with a winner. You know, it's not like this game is going to continue going. You know, once, you know, it was going to end in a disappointing matter for one side. So that's just kind of the way it unfolded. And but I think it was still a great game. And like I said, I could have seen that play going either way, whether like Bradbury hoped they let it slide, but they didn't. And I could have seen why, you know, so.
Speaking of, you said the guys weren't salty after the game, during that play after the game, they had a reason to be salty a few days after the game. And that's when Juju Smith took to Twitter on Valentine's Day mocking Bradbury's hold. I don't know if you guys saw that. I'm pretty sure you did, because it was everywhere. But
I did that. I did see it.
And whoever wants to answer, we could all take turns if you want. What did you make of that? Do you think it was appropriate? Was he out of line?
I think Juju doesn't really have room to throw shade like that. I mean, yes, the second half he did get a lot of reps and he was being targeted a lot, but when you look at how close the game was and what this team could have done to them, I think you just take the win and you kind of celebrate with your team. And it's just, I just look at it as an immaturity thing. I mean, listen, he's got every right to do it, but is it necessary? No. And I don't remember who replied to his tweet, but someone called him out saying, like,
it was, you know, AJ Brown.
Okay, it was AJ Brown saying that he was lucky, you know, that he got a 1-year deal, and, you know, roasting him about all of his TikTok stuff. That I thought was funny. And you know, I hate to give any of the Eagles guys any credit, but I like the fact that he came to the defense of him like that. I thought that was funny. But yeah, overall, I thought it was, sure, it was a good meme on Valentine's Day, but I didn't think it was really too necessary of him to do that.
Castle, I agree with you. I think obviously they won, so they have the upper hand. But I think if the Eagles players were like being salty and kind of were like complaining about it and going on Twitter and saying like, you know, the Chiefs were ass, like we should have won that game, the refs just cost us, blah, 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 then yeah, I think that is, you know, you could throw some shade in there. Like, well, you know, doesn't matter. But the fact that he did do that when, you know, the Eagles players were kind of, you know, accepted the loss, like, you know, like good, responsibly and like, you know, in a fair way, like, I think that was, little unnecessary, especially this this soon. And especially Juju, it's not like I like Juju and he had a great year, but if Travis Kelce said that, you know, all right, maybe like because he's Travis Kelce, like he's a game, like he could single-handedly, you know, change the game. Like Juju, you know, I don't know what his final stat line looked like. I know he had, you know, some good catches and stuff like that, but it's not like he's really, or like Pat Mahomes said that, like, then, yeah, I could see because, like, those dudes are, you know, beasts and, like, can take over a game. Juju's really not taking over a game, or at least at this point in his career, you know, maybe with the Steelers, he could have. But, yeah, I think that was a little uncalled for, and but I'm not surprised that he was the one to do it because he's that type of character and has that personality, and he seems like he's, you know, he always likes to poke fun at things. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's sports. Everyone's, you know, they're all competitive. And, you know, like I said, they got the upper hand. And, you know, who knows, maybe if the Eagles won and it was a certain play, maybe they would have done the same thing. So you can't totally fault the guy. But, yeah, Castle, I'll agree with you. I think, you know, I think that time it was maybe a little uncalled for.
TJ, you know what this
is? I was just going to say, it's not the first time we've seen this either this year with Twitter, with the Cancun on three thing. That's like, what,
you read my mind. I was about to get to TJ with that. It reminded me of Eli Apple when he basically threw shade at DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth because I was just going to say, hey, haven't we seen this before with Eli Apple? Someone doing the absolute bare minimum and then taking a lot of clout for it?
But at least he got clapped back after they lost. Everyone had a field day with Eli Apple, at least for now.
Yeah.
Juju kind of has that last laugh because, you know, he's got a ring to prove it.
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, though, it's just not necessary. Like, I kind of agree with these guys. Like, it's just not necessary. And especially because it's something that was so controversial.
Bradbury felt just terrible about it. Like, imagine how he feels.
Yeah, yeah, and I love James Bradbury. I still love him. Once a Giant, always a Giant. But, like, it's just a low blow. You didn't have to make a meme out of it. And like I was saying before, with something that's like such a controversial call to end the Super Bowl the way that it did, I would take my ring and be like, hey, this is what I got. I'd leave it there, but that's me personally. But whatever he has coming to him, whether it's people beefing with him, whether it's whatever it may be, he's got it coming to him no matter what, just because he poked the bear, essentially. You don't want to poke a sleeping bear because you get the wrath. And that's just what happens. You act stupid on social media, you suffer the consequences.
He's got to take a page out of his teammate Melvin Gordon's book and use Twitter properly to humbly brag about being a champ.
If I remember correctly, didn't he tweet
that he admitted he
I didn't do shit. I got carried for this.
Yeah.
Humbled, very humbled.
When did that even happen? I mean, I could have totally missed it, but I think, I don't know about you guys, I was totally blindsided by that. I mean, I'm happy the guy won a ring, but I had no clue he was with them.
Hey, I guess when you're in a group project, he picked the right group. Got an A for doing nothing, it seems like.
He put his name at the bottom of the paper, and he got the 100.
I'm just glad that one of the Badger Goats got a ring. So, and plus, I mean, it's not like Melvin Gordon has been like, I mean, at one point he was like a top back in the league. You know, so like this is kind of like, it's not like he's been just like a backup his whole career and then just got a ring. Like, I mean, he's been, you know, the main guy on, you know, a couple of teams, and finally got the ring. So yeah, I like, if I were him, I'd be hyped too.
Because I'm a man of many hats, I had to pull up when he got signed. He got waived late November by the Broncos after his fifth fumble, and November 29th, he was signed with KC.
But so, I believe it was only the practice squad. I don't think he actually played.
Yeah, he got signed to their team. Someone else got moved to the practice squad.
Got it. Okay. Well,
but he was essentially there, but he wasn't there, but he was still there.
Well, good for him, I guess. And Stevie probably is going to get his Chiefs jersey now. But anyway, on a more serious note, there was something controversial that happened at the Super Bowl, which really has caused a lot of talking points, and that was the field itself. I don't know how many of you listeners have been following, but there was a whole big thing where they had to replace the grass, and they grew it out for like 2 years, and for the last several weeks they took it out every day and watered and gave it sunlight and all of this. They had a guy, he's a sod man, watching and taking care of the grass, and it just seemed like it was worse than playing on turf, which has been a huge story all year. Players were slipping everywhere, whether it was I think it was Hassan Reddick on a pass rush play, or Pacheco when he was celebrating a touchdown, Kelsey when he was celebrating a touchdown, Mahomes dropping back to pass. There's many instances of players just slipping, and yeah, it happens, but the amount of times that during the game they're making note of players having to change cleats was pretty alarming, I would say, right? Like, this is definitely a big deal. And if the league, I don't know where the league goes from here. If this is the way, their way of saying, like, hey, you guys wanted grass fields so badly to get rid of turf, and now you complain about this, is, you think this is kind of what the league is saying by doing this?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, like, I just don't, because the Cardinals, their grass has always been like a cool, like,
it's been known topic. As a great field to play on.
Well, because theirs was always a topic, because theirs was the one of the first ones, I think, was like, yeah, like grown outside and some of that, and then rolled in on that machine. And then like the Raiders have done, kind of followed that, and they have something similar. But I mean, I don't think it should matter. You know, like the NFL shouldn't like want to like get revenge on their players because they want grass compared to turf. I mean, it shouldn't matter the difference. But I just was kind of shocked that it was that bad, especially when they were growing it for 2 years and really like probably taking better care of that than, like, you know, some people do their kids. So the fact that, you know, on Sunday everyone was slipping and they had to change cleats and all that, like, I think it's just more of a matter of like what kind of went wrong in that process, to where, I mean, it looks beautiful. It looked pristine. You know, the paint job was well done. Like, you know, looking at it, it looked like one of the better fields, probably the best football field I've ever seen in my life. But then when you actually watch the players play on it, it looked like no one could, you know, could get any sort of footing and traction on it. So I don't know what went wrong, but I mean, there wasn't any injuries though. Like the turf has gotten, the reason why the players don't like the turf is, you know, sometimes they get stuck, you know, and then that's where they like tear usually their knees up. This one, they just were slipping. So who knows what you know, the league will look to, because I know the Super Bowl is in Vegas next year. So I don't know if they've already been same kind of thing. Like I said, it's the same kind of platform that the field rolls in. And the funny thing with that stadium is, so the obviously the Raiders play there and they play on grass, but then the UNLV, the university, they play on turf in there. So they already have two different surfaces, you know, so college plays on turf, the NFL plays on grass. So I'm assuming they'll do grass for the Super Bowl next year. But same thing, they kind of growing it now like they did for this one, or are they just going to use like the Raiders field and just kind of touch it up a bit and then repaint it? I don't know, but yeah, they better like figure a new method out, because for some reason, like, you can't have players, especially in this big game, players slipping all over the place.
I think a big thing was the grass itself wasn't an issue. It was that they had painted it to look shiny. I don't really know. Maybe they wanted it to be extra shiny or something. I have no idea. I'm not the sod father. I'm not the one taking care of the field, so I have no idea.
You know, I think I'm going to...
It sounds like you know a lot about it.
I think they should hire me to take care of that. I mean, listen, I keep my grass at home. And listen, you know, that I can you know, my dog digs it up. And, you know, we live in New England, so it's dead half the year. But, I mean, that summer, like, I try to keep that grass pristine as can be. So maybe the NFL should look to hire... Sod Father Stevie over here, and maybe players won't be slipping next year. Just saying, Roger Goodell.
I'm at a loss of words right now, Stevie. Sod Father Stevie. Oh, geez. Well, I can't really make a transition out of that. So let's talk some indoor sports now instead of grassy sports. Castle, it's All-Star Weekend in the NBA. I'm excited. You're excited. Sod Father Stevie's excited. But a big thing is it really isn't what it used to be, or a long time ago. The dunk contest sucks. Three-point contest is really the only exciting part. NBA All-Star Game is fun, and hopefully that'll be interesting to watch. But the skills challenge sucks. What dunk contest specifically? It doesn't seem like stars are gonna wanna play or gonna wanna participate in it anytime soon. Do you think the league has realized that and they're gonna wanna make some sort of incentive to get guys like Ja Morant and Zion to participate even just once because they've never done it? And they're still so young.
So, you know, it's tough to say how the league will move forward with the whole All-Star Game approach, because when the league was under David Stern, it was indescribable. The All-Star Weekend was my favorite All-Star event in all of sports. I mean, you know, just the stuff that comes to mind right off the bat is Dwight Howard and his Superman dunk, Zach LaVine's dunk contest, him going back and forth with Aaron Gordon. You know, you have guys making these crazy, having these crazy back and forths in the 3-point contest. And even, I don't remember what the event was, but when you had that event where it was like an NBA legend, someone from the WNBA and a current player.
That got replaced by the skills challenge.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand why they changed. And maybe when Adam Silver came in, you know, things were different. Now, to answer your question about, do I think they're going to present any incentives? It's tough to say, because on one hand, how much should you really incentivize a guy like Ja Morant? You know, it's All-Star Weekend. You know, celebrities are going to be there. I would like to say it's going to be pretty heavily viewed. So how much do you really need to incentivize? What, you need to, you know, throw him a bonus? Or I don't even know how they would go about it. But I think if you're a big enough name in this league, and you're invited to participate in an All-Star Weekend event, especially even if you're older or younger, it doesn't matter. if it's your first time being invited and you're a guy like Ja Morant, why wouldn't you want that exposure? And why wouldn't you want to make it fun and even expand your fan base? So, you know, I don't know how much they would need to incentivize, but on the other hand, I do understand if these guys are hesitant because of how big they are and the freak chance that they get hurt. So I don't know what the league exactly would need to do, but I think getting invited, in my opinion, should be enough, because getting these random guys, like, listen, I'm a Knicks fan, so I'm not gonna, you know, I'm excited that he's in it, but Jericho Sims is one of the dunk contest participants. Like, the guy wouldn't even have this opportunity if it wasn't for Mitchell Robinson. So how worthy is he really of it? So I don't know what the league needs to do to take a different approach, but in terms of getting bigger names out there, you got to just sell them on the fact that, hey, you're Ja Morant, you're an all-star, it's your weekend, show up.
Yeah, if you look at, like, sorry, Stevie, I'll let you go after, but you look at baseball and the Home Run Derby, yeah, Judge didn't do it this year, but he's done it in years past. Pete Alonso loves the Home Run Derby. He's done it back-to-back years. There's even video of him, like, working out intensely and getting in the zone to prep for it because, you know, he takes it seriously. Hitting home runs is his thing. Kyle Schwarber, who led the NL in homers, was in it. So when you look at that and then you compare that to basketball, it's pretty pathetic. The NBA, where it's a sport that requires a shit ton of athleticism, you see highlight plays after highlight plays every single night. They struggle to get four NBA players to be a part of this. They have to go into the G League to get a guy. And frankly, I think he's the favorite to win. When you put it like that, it sounds pretty pathetic that a G Leaguer is a favorite to win, in my eyes, to win an NBA dunk contest. A guy who is not on the active roster as of a few days ago, because he was signed to the 76ers active roster. But when he was, when he accepted his invitation, he was not an active member on the NBA roster, which is pretty sad. And the fans deserve better.
This is what I'll say with the dunk contest, because the three-point contest has no problem getting guys in it. I mean, Tatum's doing it this year. You know, Dame has done it a lot. Curry, obviously, Klay Thompson. LaVine did it last year for the first time. So that's no problem. The slam dunk contest, I feel like when Dwight Howard, you know, Nate Robinson, look at Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, like it's because those guys wanted to do it. You know, they couldn't wait to do the dunk contest. Now, this new generation, it just seems like they don't want it, which I'm just shocked, because it's just like everyone, like the other, I love watching the whole thing, and I look forward to the NBA All-Star Weekend's my favorite weekend, and then the MLB, and then the NHL, and then I could care less about the Pro Bowl. But the NBA All-Star Weekend, like, I remember watching it always as a kid. Like, always. I would never miss it because it was so cool. And what do you look forward to? You look forward to pretty much the last hour or so, a little less, for the slam dunk contest. You know, and to this day, you still kind of do. But it was always headlined by these big known players. But I think you can't talk bad about, like, Mac McGong. I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Mac McClung. I'm not talking badly on him.
Yeah. And
he was a YouTube sensation with his dunks. So in that aspect, if they're going that route, I think it could be cool. And if you add in YouTubers who are professional dunkers, I think that could be sick.
Well, so that's what I'm trying to say too. It's like, or Jericho Sims, you know, yeah, he doesn't have the name, but he's got a 40-inch vertical, or, you know, something like that. Like, he can almost jump like 4 feet in the air, not quite, but, like, you know, a little over three, I think it's 40 inch. So if these, I think maybe because there's a lot of creativity that goes into the dunk contest, you know, like obviously you gotta have to do now that so many dunks have been done, you know, Blake Griffin jumping over Carr, you know, like so many props have been used over the years. How many 360s, windmills? So it's hard to come up with something different that sticks out. You know, that's why I think the Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon ones were some of the best ones ever because they were just so creative. But, you know, jumping from the free throw line, like how much more creative can you be? So I wonder if this is why some of these like a John Moran and stuff like that, like, yeah, he can, you know, dunk with the best of them, but maybe he can't do too many flashy ones. Like he can, you know, dunk over people or really throw it down hard. But like, obviously I have a feeling he could do some really cool ones, but maybe he just like doesn't, you know, have time or can't come up with like three enough dunks to do, you know, but maybe like a guy like Mac McGlung who does all these creative dunks. And like, this is why, you know, it's appealing to him and maybe appealing for the league to like get, yeah. So he doesn't play in the NBA, but he's still in the G League, which is obviously affiliated with NBA, and he does cool dunks. Why get a big time guy if they're not going to do anything cool? You know, you want that like wow moment. So yeah, I wish Zion, but Zion's been hurt like almost every All-Star game.
Anthony Edwards, you're telling me Anthony Edwards doesn't have creative dunks? Like,
you know, you would think so, but you know, maybe he just doesn't want to, or maybe, I mean, who knows, next year he could.
Frankly,
or,
I just think this generation of NBA players, like Castle was saying, I just don't think they want to or care about it enough. And it's a shame because growing up, like you mentioned, the Blake Griffin dunks, the Dwight Howard, Nate Robinson, those were the events that we wanted to watch. And like, we really were spoiled because both all the events were really good. And it was kind of main event after main event type of events. And I like the Saturday events more than the All-Star game anyway. Now, when it comes to the Saturday events, I'm only looking forward to the 3-point shootout and now the game as well, because, you know, I'll actually see the stars who are all stars perform. When you look at least the NFL or the NHL, when they do their skills contest, who performed in them? The Pro Bowlers, the All-Stars, not these no-name guys. And I'm not saying Mac McClung isn't a great dunker. He might win. And I've said that already. I think he can win. But that's not the point. You have all non-All-Stars taking over All-Star Weekend. These stars who are All-Stars aren't doing anything. So it's pretty sad to watch. LeBron, who's in year almost 20, has never been in the dunk contest. You're telling me there are four players better dunkers than LeBron over the last 20 years.
And I agree. And LeBron ones always confused me, but also I think it's got to be mutual. Maybe the league had reached out to LeBron and
the league has even said that they're willing to pay LeBron to do it.
Yeah. So maybe that's more on LeBron's half that he doesn't, I mean, especially now, I don't think he's going to do. He's not.
You can't keep making excuses for that's three names I've already given you. I think, like I said, I think it's these stars have no interest.
No, I don't know. And I think for next year, the depending on how this one goes, because I agree with you guys. I want to see these, like, don't get me wrong. Like we said, like Mac McGlung might do some really cool dunks, or Jericho Sims might jump over the hoop and still dunk. But it just doesn't have the same effect as, say, if, like you said, like a Zion does it, or a Ja Morant, or I'm trying to think of some other like good like dunkers. And I think the league, you know, like especially depending on how this one goes, like for next year, they're really gonna have to, and even if you can't get a guy like Ja Morant, yeah, like try to get an Anthony Edwards, you know, number one overall pick, you know, try to get. Oh God, I can't think of names, you know. Like say like Paolo Banchero, you know, if he like, you know, I don't know how crazy dunker he is. Obviously, he can dunk. But, you know, like someone like, you know, these top picks, guys that like are popular, you know. And then like say like when Bronny gets into league, I'm sure, you know, everyone's want to see Bronny do it. Or like some of these other, you know, guys like.
Keep it simple, Stevie. All-Star Weekend is about the All-Stars.
Well, I know that. I'm saying like, you know, like.
You're saying you're gonna watch the game Sunday. And there are going to be guys you may not realize are dunkers are going to have some sick dunks in a game, in the All-Star game. Russell Westbrook had a sick dunk in the All-Star game years ago. Paul George has had a sick dunk years ago. There are plenty of guys. Steph Curry isn't a dunker. Okay, that's fine. No. But there's plenty of guys who may not be labeled as dunkers are still very capable of putting on a show.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with you. Like, I'm torn because like it is a cool opportunity for like some of these guys to be involved in All-Star Weekend and stuff like that. But All-Star Weekend is supposed to be like the All-Stars, you know, like they earned it, you know. They were voted in, they were, you know, drafted to the teams and blah blah blah, and they were so. And I think the NBA, you know, they could see some rating drop off because it's like, oh, they want to watch a dunk contest. And you're like, who are these guys? So, but it's up to the league. Obviously, we can only, the only thing we could really do is just watch and enjoy it and keep it on or turn it off. So, yeah, I'm hoping for next year they do get, you know, at least like two. I don't mind if there's like one or two guys that may not be the biggest names, but if they can throw down some cool dunks. Like a Derrick Jones when he won with the Heat, you know, like that dude could fly and jump and like he did some cool dunks. So like, yeah, I don't mind like him, but yeah, give me some cool dunkers in there. Or like give me some big time guys, like all stars in there to like headline it, you know, like the dunk contest already is a headline. Now give me headliners for that headline. And I don't think it's asking for much because pretty much like for the entire existence of the slam dunk contest, there's always been, I mean, like I said, Jordan's like one of the greatest players of all time. He did it. Dominique Wilkins, you know, Dwight Howard for that time span was like one of the best centers in the league, you know, Blake Griffin, same thing. His first, like how many years in the league, he was a top player in the league. So it can be done. I don't know why now. Like we said, it seems like this new generation just doesn't like, it seems like they would rather sit on the sidelines, you know, dripped out in fashion and then just like watch these other guys do it. It seems like, to be honest, what it is then, and then recording with their phones than actually doing it. So,
which is a shame. Also, it is a shame. Who will be there, like Donovan Mitchell, like Anthony Edwards, like John Morant, Giannis, who's going to be participating in the skills challenge. Get this. With his brothers, but he can't perform in the slam dunk contest, you know, the main event. Like, that's pretty ridiculous to me. Like, he's going to be there. He's going to be in a uniform. He's going to be participating in something. Why not the slam dunk contest? People are going to pay money to see Giannis. People don't care about his brothers. It's pretty ridiculous, if you ask me.
And, okay, so you go.
No, I was just going to say, I really am curious to know if it's like, if it is a this type of generation thing, because sure, you have guys like LeBron who have never participated, but the years that we've seen great dunk contests, the guys have been relevant. Like, yeah, Aaron Gordon is not a big name. But when he participated with the Magic, you knew who he was. Same thing with Zach LaVine on the Wolves and so on and so forth. So, and I just kind of thought of this as we've been listening, but as I've been listening, you know, to this topic, but maybe the league should incentivize these guys behind the scenes because I think the way that we're expressing it as fans, they should be doing it no problem. And I think if it comes out that the league is now offering a bonus, the way that I feel is we'll kind of be like, well, this is BS. You're Giannis. You should be doing it. No problem. So maybe the league does something behind the scenes. I really don't know. It really is just strange. And I didn't even know that about Giannis with his brothers, which is even really more weird. It's like, if you're going to participate
2 years in a row that they're doing it.
Like, you're arguably the face of the league. Arguably. I'm not going to say he is, because that's a whole nother debate, but he's arguably the face of the league. And you're not going to participate in an event where you can showcase your athleticism that we call you a freak for. Like, it's really is a head scratcher. And I think it also just shows the culture of the league too, because when you talk about baseball, you have all these top guys who are doing it and they're loving it. I mean, you could just see how Alonso and Schwarber, they were loving it. And I feel like these big name guys, like, especially with the NBA, with the big names on Sunday, oh yeah, they'll play in the game, which is great. But how much of it is them wanting to play is more of, I'm just going to team up with a bunch of these sick players and we're just going to screw around in front of all these fans. So I think big picture, I think the league has kind of shifted as a whole from the All-Star game. And I don't think it's something that Adam Silver spends too much time on. And I feel like Stern might have done that more behind the scenes. And I think that's just the two different styles of how they are. I see Silver as more of a, not a laid back type of guy, but I don't see him as aggressive as David Stern. So maybe it just boils down to the league shifting away from it as a whole, but it really is disappointing. And you would hope that these older guys who have had their moments would kind of want to have the younger generation continue to carry.
And I think that's a great point. And just to kind of wrap up my thoughts on this, and like, we don't know exactly how this process of choosing the participants' skills for all the challenges, especially like the slam dunk contest, you know, because we don't know who the NBA is kind of asking, like, you know, hey, would you be interested in participating in this? You know, and then we don't know if the players are, you know, declining.
I guarantee they're asking guys like Giannis and Anthony Edwards before they're asking Kenya Martin Jr.
Probably. And I would agree, you know. So I don't know. And I think
NBA players before they ask a G Leaguer.
Yeah. I would agree and imagine they do. You know, so that's why I don't want to, you know, like, completely fault the players or the NBA, but at the same time, like Castle was saying, I think, yeah, like the older, like, guys like Dwight Howard, you know, Blake Griffin, like, they should, you know, I get, and who knows, maybe the, now that they're kind of, Dwight Howard's playing overseas and Blake Griffin's just kind of like a role player with the Celtics, maybe no one wants to listen to them anymore. I don't know, but I think, like, you know, if you don't care about the All-Star weekend anymore, I think that's kind of sad, because it's such a great weekend for the league. You know, when you think about the season, really the things you look forward to, you know, for the season, you know, from the league standpoint is obviously the playoffs, the NBA playoffs, the NBA draft, and I would say All-Star weekend. You know, those are the three things, and then obviously free agency too, but you know, I mean, in season, you play all these games, you know, and people go to the games, people watch the games, blah, blah, blah. But then the All-Star weekend is like a big kind of event that, you know, you look forward to on the calendar. And for the players, like, it should be an honor. I mean, if you're an All-Star, like, you're considered, like, you know, I mean, I think that's a big recognition. Like, if I, you know, say in high school was ever named, like, All-State or something like, that would be, like, you know, one of the biggest honors. I mean, it's cool getting recognition for your play. Like, you've done well, you've earned this. You know, they're not just picking random guys out of the hat and saying, you're an All-Star, you know? So, like, these players earned it. So the fact that, you know, it seems like the All-Star weekend, and not that it's, like, falling down, really the only thing that you could say is maybe just not as big as it was, it's the slam dunk contest. Like we said, the skills competition has a bunch of stars. The three-point contest has a bunch of stars. It's just a slam dunk contest. So, I'm hoping the league could get some big time names, and you know, I'm just kind of repeating myself now, so I'll just shut up now. But you know, but I'm gonna go with a grain of salt this year and give it a shot, and you know, see what these guys can do, and hopefully they don't disappoint. And like I said, I'm not gonna. I know if that was me and I was in those guys, you know, I'd want to be given a fair shot and opportunity to show my skill set and, you know, try to give some highlight dunks. So I'm not going to, you know, get on it too much.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying like it's not going to be an exciting watch. It still might. There's a difference with names. That's all. But before we wrap up, I want to throw a little surprise at you guys. I want you guys to give me like a little headline of something to watch for in the second half of the season, as the All-Star break basically marks the break between the first half and the second half. What's something like a headline or something to watch for in the second half? And I'll start, make it easier for you guys, give you some more time to think. Not really a headline, so I guess just something to watch, make it easier. What will happen in the West? Will a team like the Suns, who just got Kevin Durant, but is a very banged up team, will they rise to the top of the Western Conference, which is a very, very close race right now, where it's only separated by like 5 games, and a team like the Lakers, who are currently in 12th place, could end up very comfortably in the playoffs? Or will teams who are at the top, like the Nuggets and the Clippers and the Kings, Grizzlies, etc., will they start to, you know, move away a little bit, create some separation? Because there's a lot of talented teams. We haven't seen it for stretches of time, but there's a lot of talent. Obviously, I said the Suns, the Mavericks, the Nuggets, Grizzlies, etc. So I'm excited to see what happens with the Western Conference in the second half of the season. TJ, are you good to go? Because we haven't heard from you much.
Yeah, I'm good to go. Well, first and foremost, I didn't get to talk on that last segment, but you gave me all the reasons why the NHL All-Star Game and All-Star Weekend are superior to the NBA All-Star Weekend. You thought I was crazy when I said it the first time, but keep Derek White in your radars, ladies and gentlemen. Keep him on your radar. He just set a record, a Celtics record. Here's a list of Celtics players that have at least 40 assists and 23 pointers made over a 5-game span. Derek White, Isaiah Thomas, and Larry Bird. The man is playing unreal right now. In my eyes, he got snubbed as an all-star. I can feel the eye roll from Josh.
That was, again, a ridiculous take. The Celtics have 5 guys out. Derek White's going to be lucky if he gets 10 minutes when Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, Jalen Brown.
I can honestly,
I'm joking. He's going to be getting good minutes off the bench, but come on.
I can confirm to you now that Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum are back for tonight's game.
Oh, I actually didn't know that. That's good to know. But Jalen Brown is probably not going to be playing in the All-Star game.
Yeah, he's still out with a facial fracture, I believe. We're going to see masked Jalen Brown at some point this season.
There you go. If that's the case, there goes Derek White's minutes.
Yeah. But I think the way he's playing right now and the way he's played the last 10 games, I think he's going to be more than just a bench player, at least initially when all the starters come back. But he's locking down the minutes right now for the C's, holding it down in the absence of the stars. And mark my words, as crazy as it sounds, Derek White might have an award with his name on it come the end of the season. Mark my words.
Most relevant player, sure. That could be an award, I guess.
They can give that to the entire Nets team?
Yeah, basically at this point. Castle, I'll let you go, and then Stevie will save the longest rant for the last.
I don't have too much to elaborate on my headline, but I'm going to say keep your eye on both New York teams the second half of the season, with the Nets making their moves, and they got some new faces now. The Knicks have been picking up pace a little bit. Right now, the Nets are the fifth seed. The Knicks are the seventh seed. So it's going to be very interesting to see where the two New York teams end up come playoff time. I think they both have their respective storylines. I think it's going to be interesting, too, because you look at their coaching scenarios. Vaughn could be in the race for Coach of the Year. Tibbs could be on the hot seat. So there's a lot to look on at in the Big Apple right now with both of their teams. So keep your eye on those New York squads after the All-Star break.
All right, Stevie, bring us home here.
I got two, and one kind of trails Castle's, and I think Jalen Brunson, if he continues playing like how he has this past month or so, can lead himself into MVP conversation. So because he's really been balling out, and like I said, yeah, if he continues playing like this, he can lead the Knicks into a playoff spot, not a play-in, playoff spot, and he can earn himself into the MVP conversation and possibly get some votes for the MVP. Not saying he will win it, but he can definitely be in that conversation. And then my other one is, you know, the Lakers, kind of with all the moves they made, Candelo, you know, they got Mo Bamba, and then
Beasley, so, Vanderbilt.
Yep. Those guys. Yeah, that was definitely okay. They got those ties, those guys too. You know, how they can, you know, kind of turn around the Lakers season and propel them into at least a play-in spot, but possibly even, you know, into an actual playoff spot, and kind of try to catch up to some of these teams with the lower seeds. So, I like I said last week, I really like those moves. I think they will fit well. And, you know, I'm interested to see now. You know, obviously they've only played a couple games, and there's going to be the All-Star break, but then when they finally build that good chemistry and stuff, I think they, you know, I'm not going to say they're totally contenders, but I think they can make some noise in the West, you know, this second half of the season.
Okay. So I'll wait to end up. But that'll wrap up this week's episode. Thank you all for listening. Some shout outs, TJ, man of many hats, holding it down on Instagram. Stay tuned. Maybe this weekend there'll be some sort of All-Star post, maybe a fun one. Who knows? We'll see what TJ's got cooking up in the lab. And Liberty Shirt Co., great sponsor of ours. Greg Olson, Kevin Burkhart look great on Super Bowl Sunday. They even look great in the Tubi commercial, which really pranked everyone that those were Liberty shirts that weren't the same ones that were worn on the Super Bowl. So that was a nice little giveaway for us, as I wasn't pranked by that commercial. But thank you all the listeners for tuning in this episode.